How is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me,
the genes of you and me,
we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA. We're all made of DNA.
Hello, you're listening to DNA Today, a genetics podcast and radio show. I'm your host, Kira Dineen. DNA Today informs you on what's happening in the genetic world. During my broadcast, I educate you, the public, on genetic and health topics through event coverage, news stories, book movie reviews, and interviews. Guests include genetic counselors, researchers, patient advocates, and professors in the field of genetics. Joining me today is Charlotte Keith. She's a clinical cytogeneticist from Edinburgh, Scotland. She works for the Southeast Scotland Genetic Service, providing diagnostic and prognostic genetic testing for National Health Service patients. And she's promised to put on her polite voice so we listeners in the United States can understand her. Welcome to the show, Charlotte.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, definitely. Coming all the way from Scotland.
Yes, where it's dark and nighttime and I'm sure you're sitting in lovely sun.
Oh, yes, it's wonderful here. A little cold, yeah. But yes, it's still sunny.
A little cold. It's 2 degrees over here.
Okay. You win then. You win, definitely. So today in the program, we're going to be talking about cytogenetics, which Charlotte, as I said before, is a clinical cytogeneticist. And I'm way below that. I'm just getting my degree in cytogenetics this coming May. So how about you then explain to our listeners what cytogenetics is? Coming from the expert, how do you explain it to lay people?
The expert. Well, literally, cytogenetics, so C-Y-T-O. Cyto means of the cell. So it's genetics, but at a cellular level. So essentially, it's looking at chromosomes rather than right down at DNA level, which is termed molecular genetics. Although we work in the same department, but we have different people doing different skill sets. So of the cell, looking at chromosomes, and the clinical part of it is it's actually diagnostic tests that we do for patients.
And so looking at these chromosomes, for those that kind of are now thinking back to their old biology classes, we're looking at typically 46 chromosomes, and those are those kind of little lines with a bunch of different lines on them. So those bands, we call them.
Yeah.
So now that people are kind of, they're picturing this, right? So
Or cheetahs. Cheetos or Watsits.
Yes.
Or that sort.
Yeah, I like that. They're like little Cheetos. They're like, I feel like chromosome 18s look like gummy bears to me. So they're all kind of different, shapes to us, right? So what kind of testing does your service provide? What are the types of samples that you actually test with?
Yeah. Okay. So it's broadly split into three. So there's the acquired section. Now, acquired cytogenetics is basically leukemias. So there you're actually looking at cells of the bone marrow and looking at cancer cells. A lot of leukemias have a chromosome abnormality associated with them that is either diagnostic or prognostic. For example, chronic myeloid leukemia, which the hallmark of that is really a translocation between two of the chromosomes, 9 and 22, which brings together two genes that shouldn't be together, and that's what causes CML, chronic myeloid leukemia. So if we get a patient who has symptoms of CML and we look at those chromosomes and we see this translocation, then he is officially, in inverted commas, diagnosed with CML and can then go on to receive the treatment or any trials that may be relevant. So that's the acquired side. Then there's the constitutional, which is split into postnatal and prenatal. So the prenatal part is the Downs testing for women who are pregnant and either by non-invasive serum screening, they've got a risk of having a baby with Downs, or maybe they've got an advanced maternal age and therefore the risk is higher. If they choose to have testing and have an amnio taken, we would test that and we screen for the common trisomies, which is Downs, which is having three copies of chromosome 21, Edwards, 3 copies of chromosome 18, or Patau's, 3 copies of chromosome 13. But then we will also go on to look for just any other abnormalities that might be in chromosomes, sort of translocations, deletions, positional information, which is the big advantage of cytogenetics over molecular genetics. Is if you're doing molecular testing, you're really only you're seeing what's there or not there, but you're not seeing where it is. No, that sounds strange. But with cytogenetics, because you're actually visualizing the chromosomes, you're seeing where the DNA goes to and if it goes to the right place or not. And so that's quite a big thing in pregnant ladies, because people can carry what's known as balanced abnormalities, which means basically you have all the correct amount of DNA. You're not missing any. You don't have any extra. But when it condenses into the chromosomes, ready for the cells to split to make your gametes, for instance, the DNA is going to the wrong place. So it doesn't split evenly. And therefore, that can cause issues with reproduction and in children, where what it's called is getting the unbalanced product of a balanced something.
And that unbalanced product means that they would either have maybe too much genetic information of extra of a chromosome, or they're missing part of a chromosome due to that translocation, where their chromosomes are exchanging information, but in a way that you end up having too much or too little.
Yes. So when the parent, for example, say two chromosomes, the bottoms have cut off and swapped over. That means nothing to the parent because all their DNA is still there. But when they pass on one of every pair of chromosomes, if they don't pass on the two that are involved in the translocation, then yes, they're going to get an uneven amount of DNA from one chromosome or the other. It sounds more complicated than it is, I promise.
Yes, it's hard to explain in an auditory way. I think visual is a little bit easier.
But it is very simple, I promise.
Yes, definitely. And if someone has that, then and that's found in a pregnancy, that it means that future pregnancies would have a risk level of having that, versus if you found something that was de novo, which means that it kind of just happened, an event that happened, versus actually passing on a inherited mutation or structural change or something of that sort.
Exactly. We actually had a case in very recently that simplifies this, actually. It was a female, and both of her chromosome 21s were stuck together. So as far as she's concerned, that means nothing. She has all the chromosome 21 material she needs. That's fine. But when she comes to pass on one of every pair of chromosomes, because obviously you only pass on one because the other one of each pair comes from your dad, whatever 21 she passes on, the other one is going to go right along with it because it's stuck to it. So she's always going to pass on two 21s. So then when dad contributes his 21, there's going to be three. So essentially, every time she gets pregnant, it's going to have three copies of chromosome 21.
That's an awesome example. People can kind of visualize that better, that the two 21s are stuck together, right? They can't be separated in terms of creating that fetus. So that's kind of one example of how someone could inherit trisomy 21. But most trisomy 21 is not inherited in that way. It's not even inherited.
No, it's just something that happens during meiosis. And a lot of the time, there is a maternal age effect for Downs, interestingly, where it's usually the extra 21 usually always comes from mom. And the older a mom is, the more likely she is to have Downs. There's a couple of theories behind it, being that it's to do with, because essentially women, you get all your eggs at the time you're born. So the older you get, the more falling apart they are, which is charming. and it just basically, sort of messes up during the reproduction. We're getting on to some good stuff here. So there is a maternal age effect for a couple of them. But yeah, majority of the trisomies are de novo. There's a low risk of recurrence. But yeah, then the very rare cases where, say, for instance, you have 221 stuck together or any other sort of translocation that doesn't affect you, it can affect your child. And that's why cytogenetics is important. It's important to see, because if we tested that lady with molecular techniques, we would have said, well, she doesn't have any extra material or any missing material, nothing wrong with her. But cytogenetics showed us that, well, actually, the 221s are stuck together. There's a problem. And sorry, to go back to the very beginning before I went off on a ramble, the other part of the diagnostic service is postnatal, which is blood analysis. And so for the NHS in Great Britain, the frontline test for developmentally delayed children is microarray analysis, which is just another full genome screen. And the reason we do microarray analysis is because it's for these developmentally delayed children, it's not usually a very specific phenotype. So for some children, you can look at them and say, well, that child has Williams syndrome, or that child has the George syndrome, or that child has Down syndrome. Whereas for developmental delay, the phenotype is just so variable and such a wide spectrum that it essentially could be anything. So we do this whole genome high-resolution screen, which is microarray analysis. And as I said, that's the frontline test. That the majority of our work at the minute, we're very busy with that. So that's the three parts. Sorry, acquired, postnatal, prenatal. Sorry, that took a while.
Good to get the basics down, though.
Yeah, so, just a little background there.
When a patient goes for genetic testing, so the kind of genetic testing you're talking about, but there's a lot of different other types that maybe we'll get to, but how is genetic counseling incorporated into the testing, especially you're coming from Europe, so it may be a little bit different than it is here in the States?
Yeah, well, as I said, we in the UK, as you know, we have the National Health Service, the NHS, and the NHS is very strictly regulated. And everything we do is, quite rightly, very strictly regulated. Obviously, I'm registered so that I'm allowed to tinker with people's DNA. The department itself has to be registered. We get assessments all the time. And it's the whole system that is assessed. And yeah, part of the system that we have to use is, as you say, we need to have genetic counselors. So if a patient is referred by a GP for genetic testing, they will get referred to our department. And the first thing that will happen is they will see a genetic counsellor who will talk to them and find out the family history and find out essentially, I guess, what the patient thinks about genetic testing and if it's something that they really want, if it's something that would be right for them. If it is, we then progress it on to, they would speak to a genetic clinician who is essentially a professor of medicine. They are the proper brain boxes. And they will discuss the test in much more detail with them. And, well, a test or tests, because the genetic, the professors, they deal with molecular testing, cytogenetic testing, different cancer testing, hemophilia, all that sort of just the much wider spectrum of genetics. And then if they decide that any molecular tests, cytotests, that sort of thing is needed, then they come to us and we will run the cytogenetic test. We obviously know much more about cytogenetics, the more in-depth. So we do our bit, we will feedback our results, they correlate all the results together, and then once again, they get the counsellor involved and those who give the results to the patient. I mean, we would never ever speak to a patient who just phoned me, for example. I would always say, no, please speak to the counsellor. It's not something that I am registered to do. And also, again, we don't really give out results to just sort of, I don't want to say genetic GPs, that sounds awful. But we don't want the GPs giving them the results either. We don't just send out a letter saying, oh, you have a deletion on this chromosome, ta-da. It's very much, no, here, please go and see the genetic counselor who will discuss it all. And from a patient point of view and their whole family, because it is the kind of thing that will affect usually more than one person. And it's the thing with genetics, it's such a huge field that it's very important in the NHS to have what's called informed consent. And basically, to get a test done in the NHS, you have to know what you're agreeing to be tested for, quite rightly. But with genetics, it's such a huge field that it's not something that you can just say, yeah, I'll agree to genetic testing. So you really need the genetic counsellor to explain to you the ramifications of all the possible results and what they mean for you and any future children and or your family, any sisters, brothers, parents, you know. It's a huge field. There's so many things that you can't even comprehend the amount of stuff that basically can go wrong. And so, yeah, we wouldn't even touch it if genetic counselors weren't involved.
I think the field is because the field's so big that it's there are these different roles within genetics that, you know, you're clinical cytogeneticist, whereas there's genetic counselors, there's medical geneticists. So any one person doesn't really know all the information, and no one can know all of the genetic information in the world. There's no way that's ever going to happen. But
I mean, at the minute, half the issue we're having is we don't have computers big enough to hold all the information.
Definitely. Big data is becoming something that is really being talked about and sharing data and all of that. But yeah, you definitely hit it home with saying that genetic counseling is key to have really that informed consent piece of genetic counselors being a teacher to educate patients, and they really tailor it to the patient, because depending on who they're sitting with, they could be sitting with someone that has a PhD or someone that has a high school diploma. So you never know who you're sitting with. And genetic counselors are really trained to be able to do that. And also, as you said, just the ramifications that when you go for a genetic test, especially something that is looking at the whole genome or a bigger picture of someone's genetics, that you don't really know what kind of information is going to come out of that. That you could be searching for one thing, but you find something else, and you said yes to the test, but maybe you didn't want to know a certain thing, and, you know, the responsibility of telling other family members. And so there's a lot of ethics that kind of roll into science, especially with genetic testing.
Yeah. I mean, for example, if we were doing a microarray analysis and it was thought that the child had, say, the George syndrome, which is well known, it's a deletion on chromosome 22. But in the process of looking at the microarray, you find what's called incidental findings. All the abnormalities get flagged up, and so you can't not see it. And you may see that there's a deletion in the BRCA gene, which is known to cause, 80% chance of cancer. So it's that sort of thing. It's like when you went to the doctor trying to find out why your child had maybe had a heart issue, did you ever consider, well, actually, now you're going to find out that they're probably going to get cancer as well? I mean, that's a very extreme example, but that's the kind of thing. And that's the issue. There's so much information in genetics that I guess the number of possibilities is fairly extreme. And as you said, genetic counselors are amazing at being very personal with the patients, and they can really tailor how they talk about the genes and the issues. And yeah, it takes a whole army, essentially. We have multidisciplinary meetings once, maybe twice every week, where we discuss cases. So the cytogeneticists will say, well, actually, there's deletions in these chromosomes and these genes, and this is what it means. And the molecular geneticists will say, oh, yes, and well, actually, because it was on the X chromosome, we looked at the methylation patterns, and this is what this means. And then the counselor will say, yes, well, the parents are quite well read up on this, so I could go at it from this angle. And it's an army, because the field of genetics is just massive.
And one other kind of testing that is particularly being talked about in the last couple years is direct consumer testing in companies that offer genetic testing where a patient doesn't necessarily have to be informed. We're talking about informed consent. That's really a buzzword now and a very important buzzword. What do you think about direct consumer companies? How do you think that these are kind of impacting genetics and people's perception of genetic testing? I mean, it's not straightforward in any sense.
No, oh no. So from a very UK point of view, and I am Scottish, so I will really try not to swear here. I really don't like them. The thing is, in the UK, if you think that there is something going on that may be a genetic thing, you can go to a GP and they will refer you if they agree. It's easy. And it's, well, in the UK, it's free. And you will get counselling with it. These companies who say, oh, just, you know, spit in a tube and we'll give you results of all these genetics. What genetics do you want results from? I mean, do you want to know that you're going to get dementia? Do you want to know that you've got an 80% chance of cancer? I mean, one, I hope that those sort of genes aren't in their panel, because that's just completely unethical, in my opinion, to not have counselling available when you do that. And actually, the adverts over here say, oh, you will get results, but please go and see a genetic counsellor. Well, why didn't you just do that in the first place?
Yes.
So the other stuff that they must be telling you is stuff that, I guess, neither here nor there. I mean, there's genes have variable penetrance. They, just because you have a deletion doesn't mean it means anything. I'm not sure how it works in the US. Maybe it's easier in the US just to pay to get this, and then you can go and say, well, actually, I have a deletion in this gene, someone help me. But in the
kind
UK,
of, you can pay $100 to have a genetic test from a company such as 23andMe. And the 23andMe commercials on all the time. That it's some, if you say 23andMe, people in the United States are like, I've heard of that, or it sounds familiar.
Yeah, they're one of the big ones over here. And those, then, yeah, over here, I'm like, well, if you think there's something wrong, just go to your GP, because we will test it for you for free with counseling. If you don't think there's something wrong, why are you looking? Like, if it's not broken, don't go looking for trouble. That people don't understand the issue with genetics is these incidental findings. There's so much information, we don't know what it means. So why go looking for information that we don't have definitive answers to? If you are fit and healthy, don't go prodding around in stuff that is just going to get you worried for no reason.
There's plenty of articles on PubMed if you're interested in genetics to read about. You don't necessarily need to go to these companies to learn information.
This is a very personal opinion, but I'm not a fan of I think if you need it, it's there for you. You don't need to go and these people who, I just think it's really unethical. I don't, that's to say, I will start squinting in a minute.
It's a complex topic, as all of these are.
It is. As I say, in the UK, though, if you think you need genetic testing, go talk to a GP. If they agree, they'll do it for you.
Yes.
If they don't agree, you don't need it.
Definitely. And another kind of genetic testing, or a result of genetic testing, or I guess more people that are going for genetic testing, can be people that don't know their diagnosis or don't know what they have. And this is probably a rare disorder, a rare disease. And you had mentioned previously, we were talking before the show, about a really cool resource that I maybe have heard of, but I hadn't heard of kind of what it is. If someone has a genetic result that they have a different kind of structural abnormality or deletion or mutation or something of the sort, and maybe a couple people in the world have it, so we're talking about ultra rare diseases or super rare, what's a good resource for people to use that are in the rare disease community?
Yeah, there's a website called Unique, and they're brilliant. I mean, I use them as a cytogeneticist, but they're actually they have information for professionals, but they're really aimed at families of children with these disorders. And they do cover the, I don't want to say common ones, but the more well-known ones. But they essentially, I think it is worldwide, but they essentially cover, from what I can tell, pretty much every abnormality that's ever been found in children, in more than a handful of children worldwide. So basically, if you go to their website, look up whatever abnormality, say if you are a parent and your child has it, or you're just interested. So say you've been told that your child has, I don't know, 14q32 deletion, and you know, quite rightly you'd go, what? if you go onto Unique, they will have a pamphlet for 14q32 deletions, and it will explain in very clear, simple terms what chromosomes are, what deletions are. But then it will say stuff like, you know, there are 12 children worldwide that have this same deletion. 8 of them first walked at age 3. 4 of them had some verbal issues, but parents say that they're a very happy child. 2 of them are fascinated with water and had some eating difficulties, but are now really okay. And it basically lists the developmental stages and how the children with these abnormalities have progressed. And so, it's a really good resource for learning about these rare things, but also for families that are dealing with them. You find out that there are other children out there with the same thing, and it can give you an idea of not only the issues that you may face, but it also goes into the really nice side of it. You know, it will have pictures of some of them, and it will say, you know, she's a content child and she really likes doing jigsaws with me. You know, just sweet little things like that as well. So it's actually a really, it's good, simple science, but informed, but also really quite personable and sweet as well, strangely. It's a brilliant resource for everyone, and I would recommend it. So that's Unique.
Yes, and I'll put that in the show notes for people that want a direct link to that. But I'm sure you could also Google Unique. But
yeah. Google it. Annoyingly, I don't think Unique is the actual webpage address. But
right.
Unique. I think it's rare disease or rare disorder, something like that. But yeah, if you just Google it, you'll find them.
Yes, definitely. And one last question before we end the show. We've talked about cytogenetics mostly. We've mentioned molecular diagnostic genetics. Where do you see the future going? Cytogenetics, both fields are relatively new in terms of, you know, fields of science. But do you see molecular diagnostic genetics kind of taking over cytogenetics with things such as exome sequencing becoming more popular and different technologies of that? Or do you think, yes, maybe it will go forward, but cytogenetics is always going to be there because we're always going to need to just look at, you know, straight up chromosomes?
Yeah. Obviously, I'm slightly biased.
A little bit.
I mean, this is actually really topical. In the UK at the minute, all the genetic departments are restructuring. Over the last 3 years, actually, my lot, which was cytogenetics, and the molecular genetics team, we actually moved into the same building and we've become much more closely integrated. And we're also trying to bring across hematology and the more cancer, not just genetics, but just diagnostics in general. There's a lot of overlap that's happening now. For instance, microarray analysis, which I mentioned that we do, it came under the realm of cytogenetics because it was a whole genome screen. So it was sort of the bigger whole picture, which was what chromosome analysis is. But it's actually using sort of molecular-based techniques. So there is a bit of crossover. The next big thing is going to be next-generation sequencing. We do offer some of that at the minute. And that is a more molecular-based technique, I guess. But with Cyto doing microarrays, we already know a bit more about the variants and the genes. And so, yeah, it's a crossover. And over the next 5 years, I would say, in the UK anyway, we're not going to have cytogenetics and molecular genetics. We're going to have just genetics. Chromosomes themselves, we do look at a lot less than we used to. As I said, we now do microarrays for developmental delay. I guess the standard chromosomes that we look at these days is for infertility couples, because they're more likely to have something balanced. At the minute, cancer trials are still, in the UK anyway, are still requiring chromosome analysis because, again, it's translocations that are involved in leukemia. But a lot of those things, the new technologies that are coming out, they sort of put probes that span the translocation region. And so now translocations are being able to be picked up by molecular techniques, which was previously thought to not be possible. So again, it'll be a molecular technique, but with cytogenetic knowledge behind it. So I think there will be a very small role for, inverted commas, traditional cytogenetics, i.e. people like me who can look at this zebra striped what's it or CO on a screen and go, oh, well, that's a chromosome 17 and it's got a bit missing on the end. A very small role, but I think genetics as a whole will benefit from people coming from all sides, and yeah, it will just be genetics. But it is such a huge field, you're always going to have people maybe not specialized in a certain technique, but more interested in a certain technique than others, I guess.
And the field is just, you know, as you said, so large and just changing so rapidly that it's something that, you know, you can't even keep up on. And for us to just talk about, you know, a certain subfield of genetics, cytogenetics, that we've talked about, it's like we've barely scratched the surface. So it's, we could go on for hours and hours, I think.
Yeah, I mean, in cytogenetics alone, there's sort of maybe 6, 7, 8 different lots of testing that we can do. And then up from that, you've got molecular genetics, and they've probably got 20. And then up from that, you've got cancer genetics. Yeah, it's massive. It's mind-blowing. So yeah, you are going to have people who know more specifically about certain areas. But the good thing with having such a large field is that I guess it does, if we all come together, it does offer a good diagnostic service. But the what are you saying about going so fast? I mean, microarray testing, for instance, became frontline for developmental delay only 4 or 5 years ago. And we're already now, the last 2 years, something, if you want to look it up, it's called the DDD project in the UK, which was the Deciphering Developmental Disorders, which used microarray and next-generation sequencing to study sort of hundreds of families to try and build this database of new variants. And now in the UK, there's the 100,000 Genomes Project. Again, you can Google it, which is also next generation sequencing. So in the case of in the span of 5 years, this new technology has come as the forefront of genetics, diagnostics, and now it's going again to be replaced by something else.
Yes, always the new technology.
Yeah, always. You're trying to do your diagnostics on the one while learning about the other one and testing it out. it's a never-ending loop, I guess, of, oh, new technology. Yay, we've verified it. Let's start using it. Oh, new technology. Yeah.
Definitely. That wraps up today's episode of DNA Today. Thank you so much, Charlotte, for coming on and sharing your expertise in cytogenetics.
No problem. I'm glad I didn't swear, although I did ramble. I do apologize. Scotland and me, we can't help it.
Definitely, yeah. You can check out dnapodcast.com for all episodes of the show and also information on guests and mini lessons and all kinds of fun things. If you're on Twitter, you can tweet me or follow me at dnapodcast. And any questions for me or Charlotte can be sent in at info@dnapodcast.com. And one of us will be sure to get back to you on that.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for listening, guys. And join me next week to learn and discover new advances in the world of genetics.